We're coming to an end of a month of exploring wise or right effort. Samavayana. I came to this topic at the beginning of the month with many conflicting ideas, nothing organized. And I set my intention to spend this month studying, exploring, practicing wise effort. I was feeling the need to get grounded and centered. The world felt crazy. You may be able to relate to that. And I was feeling a bit like the character James Joyce described in The Dubliners. He lived at a little distance from his body, regarding his own acts with doubtful side glances. So focusing with wise effort felt like a lifeline. This morning, I want to share how my month went. Whether I've learned to steady my mind. Remembering that our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, encouraged us to ease off the efforting, to pause, relax, allow, I began with a little play. Liberation can't be forced. We explore, we gain insight, we sit with our insights, walk with them, live with them. Always adding more insights, more depth to our understanding. I'm fond of working with Zen cones or open questions, letting a cone such as, out of nowhere, the mind comes forth. Accompany me for a few days and just notice how, whoop, things just come up. Just come up. Or a question that floats along with me. I played with the word effort. What is effort? Where am I efforting in this moment? Where are you efforting in this moment? I can feel my toes curled. Who is making an effort? What is gentle effort? Curiosity gave me focus, and checking in with the effort in the moment revealed how often I forget and let myself get caught up in the drama of others' experiences, the news, a surprising email, social media, my cat's distress, checking in with the body, asking where am I tense? Can I relax? What's inspiring this tension? I was no longer at a little distance from my body. I found my enthusiasm for putting gentle effort into staying mindful and began to feel more grounded. So far, so good. But I realized I'd jump past the topic. To what does wise effort refer in the context of the Eightfold Path? From the Dhammapada, wisdom springs from training the mind. Without such training, wisdom declines. Having understood these paths of progress and decline, one should conduct oneself so that wisdom grows. And so began the study of my month-long practice. The study part. I read about wise effort, consulting Ajahn Sushito, Bhikkhu Bodhi, Norman Fisher, Thich Nhat Hanh, Philip Moffat, and others, and I listened to Martine Batchelor, Tuari, and all the talks here on Sundays this month. So then I was full of it. I just had too much. But I was getting an idea, and sitting with that, wise effort, the first of the last group of the Eightfold Path, the Samadhi or concentration group, comprises what are called four great efforts. Preventing the arising of unwholesome states, abandoning those that have already arisen, cultivating wholesome qualities, extending and nourishing wholesome states that are present. I'm quoting Marjolaine Jansen's description of the four great efforts because she's phrased them so we can remember them with the acronym PACE, P-A-C-E, preventing, abandoning, cultivating, extending. I love a memory aid like that. Philip Moffat's description is simpler, avoiding unhealthy mind states, abandoning unhealthy mind states once they've arisen, moving the mind to healthy mind states, and maintaining the mind on healthy mind states that have already arisen. I think of this group as relating to meditation, but clearly practicing the four great efforts is beneficial throughout our day, on and off the cushion. And although liberation can't be forced, we can't effort our way to freedom. We clearly need to make the effort to come to the cushion and to move through our days with intention, mindful, aware, as awake as currently possible. I'd kind of slipped away from that a little bit. More from the Dhammapada. Whoever cultivates goodness is made glad right now and in the future. Such a one is gladdened in both instances. The purity of one's deeds, if carefully recollected, is a cause for gladness and joy. I set my intention to practice these four great efforts, seeing whether I could notice my thoughts throughout the day and even when wakeful in the night, and ease myself out of emotional whirlwinds into wiser mind states, calm, clear. Philip Moffat says, energy follows attention. Therefore, whatever you place your attention on is what will receive energy in your life. As an experiment, I went online and read something in the news, feeling the tension take hold, my stomach, my jaw both clenching, moved away from it while noticing all this, and took a deep breath and tried to turn my mind towards something more positive, kinder. And immediately my mind began to argue with the first two efforts, preventing the arising of unwholesome states and abandoning those that have already arisen. Isn't that repression? Isn't that aversion? Won't pushing that down, burying it, just result in it returning to bite me? What we resist persists, right? A huge doubt storm whipped up to trip me. But I caught it. I see you, Mara, and I'm not tumbling. It's not aversion if I witness what's arising, acknowledge it, honor it. I know that in each moment I have a choice. I always have a choice. I can spiral into unwholesome thoughts that might inspire unwholesome words or deeds, which will not bring gladness and joy when recollected. Or after witnessing what's arising, acknowledging it, honoring it, I advocate for myself, gently turning my mind to a more wholesome state. It might be moving from the narrative that can ensnare me and moving toward curiosity about what's underneath. What is the emotion? That's what I did. I sat down and I felt the feelings, where they were in my body, their color, their temperature, dull, kind of chilly and cold, and recognized sadness. Sadness. That's something I can sit with without spinning. And in recognizing it, I can offer myself metta. From negative spiral to metta. I would say that's a great outcome. I practiced this at night when I woke and lay wondering whether I would get back to sleep. I could feel the tentacles of worry and self-abuse reaching out toward me and turn my mind to the warmth of my cat cuddled up beside me. But these were determined tentacles. I was about to manage a day long and had a list of things that might go wrong, things that I must not forget. Wasn't that productive? To go through this list, I mean, I'm awake. My heart started racing as I listed all the potential disasters, remembered things I'd forgotten when I did this in the past, the near misses. Wasn't this practical? If I kept all these potential disasters in my mind, I'd be ready for them, right? Not really. I'd be a wreck and make more mistakes. It took me a while to take a deep breath and say, stop. What's beneath all this? My mind had a ready answer. I'm the wrong person for the job. It's too much for me. no matter that I've done it this many times. This was my first time in our new home downstairs at the Friends Center, and I was spooked. Yet I had lists. I talked to someone at length who'd just done this, and he'd laughed about his own little mistakes and given me his phone number if anything came up. There would be people there who could help. I had a team of volunteers, but I was pretty wound up by then. I know myself that by that point, it's best to get up and read for a while. Be kind to myself. Then when I returned to bed, negotiating with my cat for room, I put myself to sleep with Meta for my anxiety, my fear. Too much efforting is counterproductive. Knowing when to distract myself from an emotional spiral, in this instance, getting up to read a while, is wise effort, gentle, kind, effective. This is a small thing, a tempest in a teacup. Everything went really well. But it's good practice to work with smaller things before turning to the more intense ones. Practicing being easy with myself with a less threatening emotion is a wholesome practice. On the cushion, noticing thoughts arising and letting them pass, like clouds scudding across the sky. Sometimes lovely clouds with interesting shapes. Sometimes heavy weather, all welcomed, then allowed to float on. It helped me when a more disturbing pattern arose in meditation after a medical exam. I had thought this test would reveal an improvement, and it didn't. In fact, things have progressed a little, but nothing to panic about, just a disappointment. It arose in meditation as disappointment in myself. Judging mind, how could you do this to yourself? I would gently let go of the thought, only for it to return louder, angrier, more insistent. How could you do this to yourself? What is this? I talked this out with someone several years ago. It's not my fault. Bodies wear out. I knew the pep talk about my healthy lifestyle, but here it was again. What is beneath it? Forget the narrative, yada, yada, yada. What is beneath this? Fear. Ah, I now have practice for this. From Justin Mickelson's book, The Dharma of Healing, I faced the fear and said in my mind, I see you. I'm not pushing this away. I understand why you might be feeling this way. I do understand, but I'm not going into the narrative. I care about you. How distressing this feels. How unsettling. I am here for you no matter what, supporting you, whatever you need, which right now is just this, holding myself in compassion and love. See, understand, care, I'm here for you. And that brings me to the second two efforts, cultivating wholesome qualities and extending and nourishing those that have arisen. This practice that Justin teaches cultivates a very wholesome concept, being our own best friend, our own support. Wow. That really hit me when I first started thinking about that. I've spent several weeks working mostly with negative. You notice, first couple of weeks, that was all the negative stuff. We do this. This emotional storm helped me see just why Justin's 4 points are so powerful and effective, and absolutely wise effort. Self-compassion's crucial in order to extend compassion to others, and it motivated me to turn toward cultivating wholesome qualities and extending and nourishing those that have arisen. I set out to notice when I was feeling good, enthused, laughing, engaging with good energy. It's funny how we're wired to look for what's wrong, not what's right. A small example. The other night, I had a nightmare about making an offer on a huge old Victorian house. In the dream, I walked up narrow and closed stairs toward closed doors and felt how unpleasant this was. Why would I want to live in a place like this? A feeling of dread grew stronger and stronger, but I couldn't get out of the deal. When I woke, I went over all the details for a while, growing irritated and even outraged that the friends who were with me in the dream and family were doing nothing to help me. And why couldn't this realtor just accept that I was backing out? All this before it dawned on me that it was just a dream. Even so, I felt a little tug toward, what does this mean? That I can't count on anyone? Is that true? These were supposedly good friends and family. Why are they just sitting there and judging me? Is that what everyone's doing? Was this revealing something? And I caught it. I turned toward the relief. Oh, I'm so grateful. It was just a dream. And I was just awake enough to notice that good feeling and extend this to how I love my home. All the windows, the wide steps lit by windows, no dark corners. I was so grateful. And in my cultivated happiness, I fell back to sleep until the alarm. But we do that. Oh, we just go to the negative. It's a small thing, but easy to see the wisdom. As Philip Moffat says, practicing right effort doesn't mean that you should never seek never to have difficult thoughts. That's not the point. It just means that you shouldn't stay stuck on them. Abandon them. Turn from the unwholesome toward the wholesome. In Tuari's monthly newsletter, she compared this to leaving some food on your plate that looked good when you were helping yourself, but no longer appeals. Cool. It's not aversion or repression. It's wise effort. When I can do this, turn away from the thoughts that can start the hamster wheel of worry or fear or obsessively practicing how to control something, I'm no longer being defined by my emotional reactions. It's also important not to judge ourselves, because this is practicing practice, and we're going to have to learn this over and over again. I started noticing when I smile or laugh during the day, or even in meditation. One morning I was meditating when my cat came racing into the wind, howling, this petulant howl, and crashed into the closet door, which rattles loudly when she puts her full weight into it. So this is her technique. Normally that would pull me from my meditation. But this morning, I'd been noticing love arising, affection for my life, my practice, the coziness of the room, the garden out the window. I was floating in love, and when Maggie wanted attention, I simply rose with a smile and opened the sliding door to let her choose whether she wanted to go out or not. And I sat back down, never really jolted out of floating in love. It was all done, meditation in motion, love moving me to ease her agitation. Afterward, I thought about that, how I simply extended the wholesome state and allowed the interruption into it. It was easy in that moment. For me, it was a wonderful example of how I can learn to shift the energy or ride a wave without flailing about and arguing with it. I have a book, The Zen Way Through Depression by Philip Moffat, Martin. And the one practice I've remembered from it is, when I feel myself spiraling down, I pause, ground myself in my body with a few deep breaths, and say, in this moment, I am fine. I am here, grounded, and fine. That has cut off a lot of rushes into unwholesome mind states. It's not an insanely sunny practice or a denial of what's happening. It's a wise effort to calm my mind so that I can see clearly. Seeing clearly, isn't that what this is all about? What all this practice is about? Steadying our minds and seeing clearly so that we know when we're veering from our intention. noticing when we're creating elaborate narratives out of a simple event. Back to my sense of betraying myself, I can see how I've made up a narrative. Nothing any medical professional has said points the finger at me. That's all my story. They've suggested things I might avoid, all very avoidable. In fact, nothing I would do. And all the rest of the blaming is my invention. I think I have control if it's my fault. But what suffering? When I calm myself, I see that clearly. I can even laugh about it and joke with friends about my not-to-do list. And I can take good care of myself, understanding why I'm feeling this way. Caring about it, reassuring myself that I'm always on my side in this, and I'm doing my best to keep healthy and calm. Even in the midst of all the craziness around us, we can check in and come to our aid, our own best friend. We can begin to store up good feelings, good experiences, gratitude lists, reassurances that we're here for ourselves, so they're at hand when needed. We're cultivating a calm, clear, steady mind. With that, we can check in with our intention, and that will tell us how to move forward. We're learning the causes and conditions that rock us and roll us, and we're practicing balancing techniques, how we steady ourselves to stay on the path. I used to wonder why right effort was given such an important part with mindfulness and concentration, but now I see. None of this will work if we're living at a slight distance from our bodies. We check in with our bodies, our minds. We're integrated systems. When we feel ourselves coming apart, we gather the parts and breathe. We call ourselves back and back. We begin again and again and again, practicing the good practice, preventing the arising of whole and wholesome states, abandoning those that have already arisen, cultivating wholesome qualities, extending and nourishing wholesome states that are present. I appreciate Tuari's interpretation of wise or right as harmonious. What creates harmony, sustains harmony. She says the effort necessary to shift from our grasping, clinging nature to stillness, Sama is pointing to harmonious. So we are looking for a harmonious exertion that shifts us away from grasping. The right type of effort is based upon your interest in shifting away from grasping, which leads to continuity of mindfulness and relaxing the mind. The wrong type of effort, that which is not harmonious, is based upon striving for results, which will lead to greater frustration and mental torment. Cultivating a skillful relationship with effort is very important to a strong mental foundation for the path. In my writing, I've learned the art of getting out of my way once I've set the intention for the book and allowing the story to unfold through the characters. If I fight that or force an action, it falls apart. It's not harmonious. It's the same with our practice. We set the intention and practice, dance the dance with whatever arises in our day. No judgment. We dance toward wholesome states, dance away from the unwholesome, over and over, beginning again and again. Now I understand that steadying the mind with four great efforts supports mindfulness and concentration, and frankly, all the other parts of the Eightfold Path. I have a new appreciation for that, and I hope that's true for all of you. Thank you for your kind attention. And I encourage you to stay and talk about your explorations of right effort in small groups. But if you need to go, thank you for being here. I hope your day is beautiful. And now I'm going to break us into small groups. I think everyone's back now. And I welcome you to unmute and raise your hand or just wave at me if you'd like to share anything that went on. Elizabeth. Oh, you're muted.
Sorry, I was just busy following instructions. You told me to wave at you, so I waved at you. Just to say hi. I'm done.
Okay. Hi, Elizabeth. Oh, now Jerry's doing it. Now, does he really want to talk?
Yeah, that was a wave of, hey, look at me. Yes, I want to talk. Okay. Candace. I, you know, I was wondering, oh, should I watch football this morning or go to Sims? And I'm happy with the choice I made. I really am.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm going to just be more specific. I shared this in the small group. I really appreciated how you went to all these different teachers, distilled, took in their teachings, shared those teachings, distilled them down. And then you open the book of your mind and show it how it plays out in real time. It was just, and the examples that you gave were just, oh, I can relate to that. And I trip over that one too. And oh yeah, that's the hopeful outcome to actually operate out of wisdom. But yeah, just that pausing, using those teachings, applying it in real time and, take it moment by moment and don't be surprised if it doesn't always work. So, yeah, thank you. I really appreciate your talk.
Thank you.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh. Neil or Lillian, either one.
Yeah, it's me. I guess the first cherry I drop will let that thought every Sunday before sin. So related to that one. But yeah, someone in our small group asked the question of what does meta feel like for us, and we're like actually like feeling it, and I was kind of like thinking about that. And I think something that came to mind was that it's actually kind of like really feeling that, like genuinely feeling it in my heart is like sometimes like kind of difficult. But it's not hard for me to feel it it's not as hard to feel it for others. And they started like front of me thinking about like, why is that the case? Like, why is that so different? And I'm kind of wondering, does it come from a sense of feeling that like, I should be better than other people, you know, like I'm holding myself to like a different standard than what I would hold other people to. And I guess it's just like something I want to kind of keep thinking about, like, you know, where is that like manifesting and, you know, like in places and, you know, like, is that part of what kind of like where that obstacle kind of comes from?
Yeah, I mean, say a little bit more about that. That was really interesting. That landed for me.
I mean, yeah, it's something that I've not really thought about much until just now. So I think like my thoughts are still a little unclear, but I think it just kind of comes from this sense that, you know, for others, there's more of this kind of like sense of forgiveness or this sense of like recognizing like that we're all imperfect, right? Like that we all, yeah, that we're all flawed, right? We're all just like people, and we have emotions, we have cravings, we have aversions, and like, you know, those things manifest in different ways. And I think it's just like harder to apply that same compassion to myself and like have that same understanding in the sense of like, I guess like where it comes from, where I guess like where that thought comes from is like, I guess if it's hard for me to apply it to myself and it's easier to apply it to others, then it feels like the place that would come from is because I hold myself to a different sense of accountability or sense of, I guess it's really selfing, right? Like a sense of like who I should be as myself. It kind of like puts it in a different bucket than like kind of like everyone else, even though I know like when I think about it, I know obviously that's not the truth. So I think that's kind of where that kind of like question comes from of like,
yeah.
It feels like if there's a discrepancy that kind of like points maybe to that.
Yeah. That's one of the things I've been talking about this a lot, but I've been taking this year long class on self-compassion, and it's coming back to that all the time of how we are so strict with ourselves and expect perfection immediately, I mean, if you get an insight, boom, you've got it. That's it. And it's crazy. We don't expect that of anyone else. And then Justin Mickelson's idea of being our advocate, our own best friend. I'm working on that book in a small group, and we were all like, what a concept. I mean, it was because we are so mean to ourselves. So we expect so much. And sure, it's gotten us where we are, but wow, caused a lot of suffering too. So thanks for bringing that up, because that's definitely what I'm doing about my medical issue is, you know, you know better. You should be healthy. It's like the world isn't like that. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for elaborating on that a little bit. That really helps. Judith.
Hi, thanks, Candace. I really related to a lot of what you said. And I think one thing that I really realized at a deep level lately is how important it is to give ourselves credit when something works, you know, when we actually catch the negative state and actually let it go, for example, and oh my God, that worked. Not focusing all the time on my shortcomings, you know, and how, oh, you know, I fell into this and it, but oh, I caught that. I caught that and it worked. So I really appreciate that point as well. Yeah.
Thank you, Judith. Yeah. Suze.
I wanted to respond to Nikhil, because I think I hold that issue in with kind of paradox, because to some extent, and I can't remember the Pali words for conscience, you know, those two words that we go back to, doesn't matter, but the fact that we do hold ourselves, we take responsibility for ourselves, and we have a sense of conscience, and we restate the things from the Metta Sutta that says, you know, doing nothing that the wise ones would later reprove. And there's something beautiful about the fact that we have that aspiration. Now, what we do with it, I do similar stuff as you were talking about of beating ourselves up. But then there's that. If the conscience and the taking responsibility can also be part of the foundation, it's not just self-compassion. It's also recognizing, oh, I really messed up here. I'm going to take responsibility. I'm going to do something about it. That's kind of beautiful too. It's in a way it's self-compassion, because then we say, oh, I took some good action here. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that part in as well. And I appreciated the stuff you were bringing up.
Thank you, Suze. Thank you. Lauren.
Yes, I really appreciated your retelling of the story of your month. So you went through the process you went through, and the one that I really heard, well, there were two, the doubt where you were looking at cultivating, you know, like abandoning and then cultivating. So if you want to, so something is suffering is coming up, and then you don't want to wallow in it, and so you want to you want to go towards the wholesome, but then you thought, well, is that kind of jumping over the, you know, how do you make that transition? And you said it's not aversion. If I'm witnessing what's happening, what's arising, what is the emotion underneath? And I think that was really important. It helped me see, oh, yes. And it was sadness. And you could sit with that without spiraling. So there's the place where you're spiraling, and that's not going to get you anywhere. That's the mind taking over. You're spiraling, you know, and you're, it's not helpful. It's not wholesome, but you can still be with the emotion underneath. And that's where you stay to understand and then go to the cultivating the wholesome. So I thought that piece was really important to remember. And the other one was the medical exam, what's been, and which was really the same again, what's the beneath this? Because you can just stay so much with that spiraling, but you do need to stay with some aspect of it. And the aspect is what's underneath. So the way you explained that and showed that helped me. And then that was the self-compassion, because you were feeling the fear and you needed self-compassion. So I was very helpful for me, for you to go through those steps clearly and me to remember that process. So thank you so much.
You're welcome, Lauren. Helped me too.
Yeah.
Nina.
Hi, Candace. Thank you so much. That was I really enjoyed your talk and took a lot of it in. I have to say that one of the things that I've been finding, I've been loving working on right effort. And as I said in the small group, it really helped in my maturity in the Dharma. But one of the things that I've really found is, like, in cultivating wholesome acts is the joy in discovering that. Mm. That I've been finding joy in that. And it's like Thich Nhat Hanh says that if you don't find joy in your practice, what does he say? If your practice doesn't bring you joy, you are not practicing correctly. So, I wanted to point that out, that I think that the cultivating of joy within cultivating our own wholesomeness is really an important thing to focus on, because that reinforces it.
Yes, yes, it does. It does. Thank you, Nina. Karen.
I want to say thank you so much for this talk, because it's going to help me with work with regards to the PACE thing. I can really kind of just focus on that acronym. It's short, and I can see the step is in between the A and the C for me, is to switch to, you know, not to simplify it. So, but for me to acknowledge that feeling, and I have been, and the feeling is ego. Because I've always been the best and somebody doesn't think I am, and there's no convincing them, and I'm stuck on my ego. And that's, I haven't been able to figure that out yet, of not being always thought of as the best. And it's powerful. I just really appreciate it. And to start focusing on C and E to get through my day. But the other thing is to Mikhail is to say thank you to you, is because that book, that self-compassion book, has just, I can't get through it fast enough, because I keep rereading it, because it's so foreign to have compassion for myself through surgery and being kind to myself and not criticizing myself, because, you know, my so-called standards have had to be adjusted, and having compassion for that process and sometimes sadness too. I have sometimes sadness is because I've been so hard on myself for so many years, that, and it's going to be a process of learning how to be more compassionate. The door has been opened, but that book has been instrumental. I think I've told you that before, but it was instrumental to just be able to read it in print. And sometimes I carry it around with me, read it at the bus stop for 2 seconds. I just open the book and I just read it. It just gives me this little taste of, okay, remember, Karen, be nice to yourself, be kind. And it's not being Okay, you can buy something at Nordstrom's. It's just the way I talk to myself or my expectations. So thank you so much. And to Mikhail, thanks for bringing that question up, because it is this, I can have compassion for so many things. I have compassion for the worms that aren't making back to the ground after the rain. But then I can't have compassion for myself because my house is dirty because I had surgery. And, you know, it's just this real, this amazing, amazing learning process. So thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Karen. I'm really glad that'll help. And I copied a little more than just the four HACE steps. I got that out of a newsletter.
Oh.
From it was advertising a some little retreat, and they just had that in there, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I'm looking for. So I'd like to finish with bringing up announcements. We've got some really good stuff coming up. 2 days of mindfulness in November. On the 8th of November, Steve Wilhelm will be bringing the four foundations of mindfulness alive in daily life in person and online on the east side at the North Lake Unitarian Universalist Church in Kirkland. So that's Saturday, the 8th of November, from 9 to 4:30. And then on the 22nd of November, Understanding Self and Not Self Leads to Freedom with Suze and Judith Avinger, Lyndall Johnson, and Steve Wilhelm. And that's in person or online. And it's at our space at the Friends Center from 9 to 4:30. That's the 22nd of November. Getting you ready for Thanksgiving. And then from the 5 to 7 December, online will be Philip Moffitt. He comes every year, and he's always just wonderful. He'll be leading a weekend retreat, Liberating the Ego, Humility, Dignity, and Integrity. That sounds juicy. So there will be a Friday night talk, and you don't need to register for that. And then Saturday and Sunday, it will be 9 to 4:30, and you do need to register for that. And that's online only. So lots of good things coming up.
Candace, may I add something?
Sure.
We have a new committee that formed for the folks who come in person on Monday nights. We are starting a kind of get to know each other. Come an hour early, bring your supper, and we'll eat together in the North Hall. And it's the last Monday of every month. So the first time is tomorrow night. So the doors will be open at like 5:30, 5:45. And if you're in town, and I know a lot of people aren't, but if you're in town, come and meet other people in the Sangha. So that's, and it's the last Monday of every month we're going to be doing that.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Thanks, Suze. So I just wanted to finish with dedicating the merit of our practice, which has been so strong and so sincere this morning, to the benefit of all beings. So many people need a sense of safety and security and community, need ease, and may it be so. May it be so. Thank you all.